Welcome to the Whiskey Congress. Honest, open talk dedicated to speaking the truth to those who are open to hearing it.
Black, white, right, left.
Most importantly, honest, bold, and fueled by good whiskey. In Whiskey Veritas, we are Whiskey Congress. Join the evolution.
Welcome again to Whiskey Congress. Lots of stuff to talk about, but of course, the first thing we want to talk about is whiskey.
Whiskey!
So we've got another whiskey to review. It's Bullet Bourbon. Very readily available, and I think pretty good stuff. Steve, what are your thoughts?
I'm a big fan of Bullet. It's like you said, it's readily available, and if I don't see anything else unique that stands out to grab my eye, Scotch or bourbon wise, from a whiskey standpoint, and that's usually the go-to. And then, you know, when you calculate in price, it's a pretty high value.
Yeah, I think I paid about $30 for the bottle, maybe even less than that. Maybe it was more like 25.
Yep.
All right, I scored it. You want to give yours first? Mine's written down.
No, go ahead. You give yours first.
88. I think it's really good. I'm going to give it one step below some of the stuff we've had recently, but I think it's a really, really solid bourbon.
Okay, so mine is written down as well. I give it a solid 90.
Oh, wow, okay.
And the reason why is the things that I just said. Flavor-wise, it's very good. It's balanced. It's not too sweet. It's not too dry. It's easy to drink by itself, but you put it in a Manhattan or an old-fashioned, and you have a really solid, you know, old-timey mixed drink.
An old-timey mixed drink that happens to be one of my daily go-tos.
Right. I mean, and, you know, we won't go into our debate about you and your Manhattans. I'm going to lighten it up. I'm going to go to Manhattan, a drink that's all alcohol and a piece of fruit.
All right. Since we're not going to talk about the fact that you sip a Manhattan and I drink it much slower than I drink whiskey, and there's ice in it, which does melt it down, so it is slower.
Okay.
It is lightening it up.
Okay.
I stand by my statement.
Okay. Well, I've seen you after all of the above. Okay. So I stand by my statement as well.
Fair.
But, you know, as I was saying with Bullet, it's a pretty straightforward bourbon, right?
Yeah.
You get the oak, you get, you know, your basic bourbon flavors. And again, not too sweet, not too dry. It really stands out on your tongue as just something where you're like, man, that's a good, solid whiskey. And so that's why I give it a 90. And the fact that, you know, this bottle that we have here is going to come in at no more than $31 after tax. I think that's just a great value.
I mean, I agree. If I was taking price into account, I probably would have kicked it up a bit.
Right. Yeah, that's why. I mean, I try to take that into consideration just because, you know, if you're, you know, like, so take, for instance, you know, what we had last week, the Hibiki. I give that a little higher grade because, again, for a unique scotch, and when you take everything into account, like the flavor, the presentation, and the price, then I'm going to give it a little bit higher boost because it's a unique whiskey that you can get for, you know, less than $70. You know, where some of your seasonal or your annual Ardbeg
right.
offerings are going to be over $100. You know, some of your different Lafroigs are going to be over $100. You know, some of those different scotches are going to be, you know, the older they are, you know, the more craftsmanship that goes into the whiskey, the more expensive it's going to be. And so you're going to get a great flavor, but you're not going to get a great bang for your buck. And so I think, you know, you have to bring that into account to a certain degree when you're talking about some of these different whiskeys. And so that's why I'm going to boost the Bullet up to a 90 because I think, again, bang for your buck, quality, taste, everything. It checks all the boxes.
I'm not going to put up an argument. I probably wasn't as generous, maybe because it is more mainstream. I've had it many times in my life, and I mean, I genuinely like it. It's something I will drink out at a bar, or, you know, it's something I probably should stock more of. It's something I don't keep it in the shelves.
It's big for me is, again, like you, it's one of those where if you have a group of people over and they kill your bottle, it's not the end of the world because you paid $30 for it, you know, and
you're going to find another one.
And you can get another one, it's not like it's going to go. It only comes around like a Blanton's. is a great whiskey, but for, you know, in Ohio, in our part of Ohio, it only comes around every 18 months. You know, that's why, you know, when it was here, I stocked up on it. I bought two, you know,
stocked liquor stores. And...
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things, but it only comes around so often. And, you know, the price is double of this. So,
right.
You know,
good stuff. Okay. Yeah,
absolutely. So thanks all for right. that.
So this has been a crazy week. There were so many things I was expecting to talk to you about. And then Michael Wolff's book, Fire and Fury, came out. And the news cycle just totally reset. Now, how much of it is overhyped for a book that really has not been vetted is worth discussing, I think.
Well, so let's start with kind of where everything blew up. So Thursday night, I believe, excerpts of the book made it out. You know, someone leaked it, and they hit the internet fast and furious,
right,
taking a page out of the book.
I don't think it was leaks. I think it was like press release. Like they were holding copies of the book at CNN, so they had gotten advanced copies.
Whatever, bro.
Okay, well, there's no conspiracy in how it got out. All right, go ahead.
Right, but I'm just saying it was. I mean, it was a pre. Like it's like
right.
They do it all the time with music. Like they leaked it. You know, whatever. But it comes out and there's quotes in there from Stephen Bannon. Stephen K. Bannon, who was the president's chief strategist during the campaign and then worked for President Trump as a part of the administration, and then he left, was fired, but now we know that he was fired because Trump said so, which I guess it's true. And then Stephen K. Bannon goes back to Breitbart and is on air for them, does the programming, and then he's also out campaigning for... you know, different candidates right. in the GOP for Senate and congressional seats.
And really taking on established, established Republican candidates and attacking them in primaries and coming after them in primaries.
Attacking them in primaries with candidates that are of this neoconservative movement, you know, which is even further right than we're typically used to on, you know, a number of issues. Whatever right. it might be. I mean, you know, there's a laundry list of things where they're further right, more conservative than your standard, you know, GOP. These
definitely more nationalist.
Right. Nationalist, populist, all those, you know, trigger words that are thrown out there. You know, he brought up Roy Moore. He was the big push behind Roy Moore that put Roy Moore back in the national spotlight in this Senate race. That backfired on him because Alabama... you know, now has a Democratic senator for the first time in 25 or 30 years because Roy Moore, you know, had the issues and the allegations and the things that he said. So it backfires, right?
Right.
So that doesn't look good. And then you have this book where he comes out and he's attacking Trump. You know, attacking, you know, Trump's knowledge and willing to learn and Trump's family and Melania's stupid and Ivanka's stupid and Jared just goes out and does the Middle Eastern stuff but the thing about it, nothing that he said really stands out because it's anyone with a semi-objective view, it's everything everyone has been saying all along. Right. I mean, there's nothing out there. I mean, I don't think you and I have ever attacked Melania or, you know, we've maybe questioned kind of what Ivanka's role is, but we've never really come after her. And I don't know enough about Ivanka Trump to really get into her intellectual capacity. But he basically reinforced what any objective pundit has been saying about Trump all along. And it goes directly against all the rhetoric he and Breitbart have been talking about since Bannon really kind of got into Trump and then, you know, got his hooks into Trump and then joined the campaign and was a part of the administration. And even when he left, you know, what's funny is when he left, we said, will Bannon attack Trump or will he be his, you know, his drummer boy on right. the outside? And so, you know, my thought was he would be the drummer boy.
And I think to a degree he has
been. Well, he has been up until this point. And now I haven't read the book, so I don't know. Did he tell Michael Wolff this stuff after the fact, you know, after he was out of the White House? Mm-hmm. Or did Michael Wolff interview him while he was, and did Bannon say this stuff while he was in the White House? And I think this is speculation because, again, I haven't read the book. It just came out today. I actually did stop and look for it, and it was sold out. But I think Bannon said these things while he was in the White House.
That is my understanding, that he had Michael Wolff in the White House get cleared to talk, you know, to perform interviews, to write a tell-all Trump book. And
before we get into that,
how long that happened, all
right. Right, like before we even get into the logistics of that, I think that timing is important. And a lot of people don't understand the timing of this. So a lot of people who are huge Breitbart followers are looking at this and saying, how could you say these things? Like, you know, you leave office and then you turn on Trump. Well, no, he said this while he was in office before he, you know, got the ouster. So this is kind of what he's really thought about Trump all along. So, and the scary part is, you know, when I think once people get a better understanding of the timing, then you're going to have a few people who have a come to Jesus moment with kind of their whole situation in terms of supporting Trump, because it's like, all right, if this is what Bannon thought of Trump all along, then, you know, basically a lot of what he was saying was a lie. Now, what people I believe they'll do is I think that most of that base will just side with Trump and say, boot Bannon, we don't care, it doesn't matter. The movement's bigger than Bannon, it's bigger than Breitbart, and Trump is, you know, what he is, the greatest president ever. MAGA! You know,
right.
I mean, I just, every time I hear that phrase, I just see Trump and his supporters, like, you know, just kind of going down in flames, screaming MAGA, like, it doesn't matter, everything is still going to be great, MAGA! Like, it seemed like having a complete meltdown, and you're just like, no, you're no, this is over. It's not, you didn't do it. Sorry. But
well,
anyway.
I do think it's easier for them to dissociate from Bannon than from Trump. For one, Trump is the face. I mean, Bannon did what he did. I saw something the other day that said like 69% of Republicans don't know who Stephen Bannon is. And
that's bullshit.
I actually don't think it is. There are so
Jim,
many.
Jim, he was on the front cover of Time magazine as the puppet master controlling Trump. Don't give me
I think 100%.
He did interviews with 60 Minutes. He did like he was all over the like he was. Come on, I don't buy that for a minute.
Here's why I think this, because I have talked about my recent trip to West Virginia. I was surrounded by a bunch of MAGA Trump idiots. Some of my friends, I shouldn't say that, and I can guarantee you, in that room of 14 guys, if I would have said, hey, what do you all think of Stephen Bannon?
You can't do that. You know why you can't? Because you didn't ask the question. If you would have asked the question, and if you could, if you say, I asked the question specifically, and no one knew who he was, then okay, I would buy it. You didn't.
I didn't.
And so that's why I don't buy it, because I think the I think a lot of these guys listen to Breitbart. Like, listen,
I don't think they do.
Don't underestimate
I think the 30% base that loves him knows Stephen Bannon's high school locker number. But I don't think the typical MAGA Trump moron knows. They don't want to know.
No, they know. First of all, the guy stands out like a bloody stump. All right, I mean, just with the sloppy clothes, his unshaven look, just that. Like, I mean, he looks like the creepy guy at the girls' volleyball game in high school. You know, I mean, he stands out, and plenty of people, who the hell is that guy? Oh, that's Stephen K. Bannon. That's the White House. I mean, he was a part of the administration. It was a huge deal nationally. Fox News and Breitbart are, you know, there's an information loop between the two. I just don't buy this idea that 69-70% of the GOP supporters don't know who he is. I disagree with you on that vehemently.
I can hear that. And my point of view is somewhat anecdotal, but I was amazed when I was talking to my, you know, these are people who will talk politics and they'll talk Trump and they don't know shit. They just genuinely do not know anything about Trump other than what was spewed all over the place in during the campaign voting again. So, all right, we're going to disagree there, but I was amazed at the lack of interest in anything that wasn't dangled right in front of people's faces. I agree with you that the Breitbart listeners, again, know everything about this guy. And the people who are
hardcore. And remember, Fox eventually got around, like Fox and Breitbart, because Breitbart had a lot of issues with Fox, and Fox had issues with Breitbart in terms of either one. Both of them were basically saying, "No, I'm the real GOP. No, I'm the real GOP," and you know, or "I'm the real we're the true conservatives. We're the true conservatives." And there was a debate back and forth where they were split. But once Trump became the front runner, and then once Trump got elected, then all of a sudden Breitbart kind of stops with the Trump is not the, you know, Trump is not the guy, and then they kind of came together, right? And I just tripped over my words there, but like there was a
stretch where Fox was battling against Trump, thinking he wasn't mainstream enough.
Exactly, and Breitbart had been there, Trump's main supporter, and then once Trump won, everybody got on the Trump train. So they feed, like, Fox has people from Breitbart on their airwaves, you know, and so I just find it hard to believe that, you know, because almost all your GOP people are going to be watching Fox News. So I just find it hard to believe that they don't know, they haven't seen or heard of this Stephen K. Bannon guy who was a major part of the campaign and a major part of the administration until his ouster.
I mean, which he was also again pretty aggressively portrayed on Saturday Night Live. So if you also watch Saturday Night Live,
yeah,
you
know. Yeah, I mean, like, so there's...
But so the Bannon stuff is fun, but one of the real things that came out in this book is essentially a challenge to Trump's... mental stability, mental capability. And that's, I mean, I'm not a psychologist, nor is Michael Wolff, the author of Fire and Fury, but that's a pretty big accusation. That's basically challenging, is this guy mentally qualified to hold the office? And there are legitimate ways that people get removed from office if they are deemed not to be. Now, rest assured, Trump came out and said he's not only stable, he's a stable genius, which is awesome.
It was a series of three tweets.
Fair enough.
That I read this morning. I was getting caught up on my Marvel shows on Netflix. I think I was like finishing Daredevil and going into Punisher, and I just happened to, like, while I was switching from Daredevil to Punisher, I pick up my phone and I see these tweets from Trump, and I couldn't even come up with a response. I think I actually tweeted from our Whiskey Congress account, at Whiskey Congress, a picture of, you know, someone shaking their head, and I said, my only response to Trump's tweets. Like, that's all I could do.
I saw that.
I mean, it's just, and then I put my phone back down and then just started watching The Punisher.
Said, I'd rather watch The Punisher.
I would rather watch The Punisher than be punished by, you know, Twitter.
What a weird, to call yourself a genius is almost proof positive that you're an idiot.
I made money in real estate.
Therefore, I'm a genius.
I made money in real estate. I made money. I was on reality TV, or I was a reality TV star, and then I became president my first try. So, you know, that makes me a genius.
That makes me a genius.
Stable genius.
A mentally stable genius, which is the best kind. But in all seriousness, there's something getting said about him that I kind of hits home to me. Because I've talked about my racist uncle in the past, and I feel comfortable doing it because there's no way he would listen to the show. But, you know, he's a bit over 80. I think he's 82 now. Maybe 83. Anyway.
Which we give people a pass for being racist if they're over 80.
No. I'm not giving you a pass for being racist. I'm giving him a pass for being fading mentally.
Oh, okay.
And he, when I went home for Christmas, I saw him, and he told me I was a great-grandson. I'm like, okay, I'm your nephew. And he told me a story and he corrected himself, but he is just, and I got there, he tells me a story. Half an hour later, I walk out of the room, I come back in, he wants to show me the same picture and tell me the same story. And I'm like, oh fuck, this is just sad. I mean, he's just clearly not real with it. And that's what Michael Wolff is saying about Trump, is that he's telling the same stories to people. You know, he used to tell the same story half an hour apart. Now he's doing it every 10 minutes. And that's a sign of your brain dementia. Not working so good. Dementia, yeah.
Okay, so
again, not
here's the problem. And we can go into sort of the who is Michael Wolff,
right?
Sort of part of this. To me, the whole conversation around Trump's mental capabilities, I don't put a lot of thought into it, a lot of credence. People are hoping that that's the case because that's when the 25th Amendment comes into play, right?
Fair.
And the 25th Amendment is when you can remove a president and put somebody in his place because he's not mentally capable of doing the job, mentally, physically, or,
right.
you know, whatever. And again, I don't think that's the case. Looking at him, watching him, I think he's, I don't see enough of that to where, like, if I'm hearing it from people on Capitol Hill and in the White House and in D.C., it sounds to me like that's just someone who doesn't agree with or like Trump throwing it out there, floating it out there, right? And then Trump does, like, he trips up. He had that Covfefe thing, you know, a few months back, you know, or six, right. 8 months ago, however long that was, whatever that was. And so it's, oh, my God, what happened? Like, he probably fell asleep and whatever and tweeted whatever.
Right.
And we don't see enough of it. I think that for that call to be made, I mean, I don't buy it. I don't buy it. I put no credence into it, especially coming from this particular author. You know, I think, you know, my opinions on this book, just briefly not having read it, I think that anything where it's that salacious, where it's people saying, oh, well, he's his mental capacity is because he's telling stories 10 minutes apart, like, whatever. You know, the stuff with Bannon and Ingram and Laura Ingram and, you know, these things where people are quoted and they're not coming out and saying, I didn't say it. And he's saying, I've got tapes of these people saying these things. I put credence into that for that reason. These people said these things at these times and they were recorded. They can't. The reason why Bannon hasn't come out and denied it is because he knows that he can't. He probably knows that he's been recorded. Same thing with Laura Ingram. Same thing with, you know, there's
and
a couple other.
And Coulter, Ann Coulter and said,
nope, that's what I said.
Don't hire your kids. You can't hire your kids. And when asked if she said it, she said, yeah, because you're right. She would have, right. Okay, we'll play video or audio of your screechy, annoying voice saying exactly these words, and then you can try to defend or deny it.
Right. So in those instances, that I'll put credence into that information because it's known to be accurate, right? Because they're not denying it or they're admitting that they said it. But this stuff about, well, you know, his mental capacity and all that stuff where there's a lot that goes into it from an actual medical standpoint, right? I'm not going to go down that road, right? Because that's the easy out that everyone is looking for. Like, everyone's saying, oh, well, we'll just impeach Trump based off of what? You know, like, oh, his mental capacity is shot. How do you know based off of what?
Okay, but here's why I do think it's a really big deal right now, and that's because if not for this book coming out, we would be talking about his Twitter battle with Kim Jong-un, claiming basically when Kim Jong-un said, I've got the nuclear button on my desk at all times, and Trump replied, you know, tell that guy from that, you know, foodless regime that I've got a bigger button than his and mine works, and I'm badly paraphrasing. But yeah. it essentially did include the words, my button is bigger than his and mine works. That shit you can't do. I'm sorry. That's beyond unpresidential. That's just bordering on, to call it incompetence to the point where you need to get removed from office would be way too big, and you would jump all over me if I said it. But that's fucking crazy, Steve. You can't say that shit. You can't.
I don't disagree with you that he shouldn't have said it, but that isn't the sort of mental incapacity that they're talking about, right? Like, I mean, they're literally talking about a dude on his deathbed in a fucking coma, right? Or in a state of dementia that's so bad that, like, he's wandering outside on the fucking North Lawn in his underwear. Like, that's what we're talking about, and that's not what we have.
But we are talking about a guy who is literally threatening to push the nuclear button.
Okay, so he's bad at being the president, but that's, we can't, based off of our Constitution, that's not how it works, right? And again, this is the consequence of losing an election. This is on Hillary Clinton and her team for half-assing it, thinking that they were just going to go in because it was Hillary's turn.
That, right? You're not wrong.
Like that. These are the consequences of losing elections. And so while we don't like anything, we don't like the way that he governs, we don't like the way in which he speaks to the people that he's governing, and he doesn't have the normal presidential, you know, air about him. Those aren't reasons that you can remove a person from office.
I understand, but
I mean, if you want,
but quote quotes like that, saying things like that, are reasons why you need to monitor his mental
fine.
capacity.
If we want to monitor it, fine. I agree, but there's only so much we could do. I mean, listen, Ronald Reagan, you know, was suffering from dementia, and but they, you know, they covered it up, and protected him to the point where it didn't really come out until after the fact. Like, nobody really knew.
Right.
But he also
didn't know how long it was.
We don't know how long it was. We don't know how long it was. It wasn't in this age of social media and 24-hour news cycles. So who knows how that would have played out if it happened right now.
True.
But I think, now listen, if it truly is an issue now, it's a 4-year term.
Right.
We're done with year one. And if it begins to escalate, if it's true and it begins to escalate, then we'll probably get to a point before the year four where the 25th Amendment comes into play. But you can't make it happen. You can't force it. You can't rush it. You can't create it. That's just something that we'll have to keep an eye
on. Exactly. It has to be something that people pay attention to. And whoever is responsible for making that assessment, whether it's a Congress or whatever, needs to break out your 25th Amendment handbook. Because
the question is, whose responsibility is it to monitor that?
I have no idea.
You know, I mean, I think, I mean, that's the real question. At what, like, who is actually monitoring it? And, you know, is it whoever his physician is, and they're saying, listen, this guy,
well, like, his physician called him the best, you know, whatever.
Man,
yeah,
right. But I mean, like, if he gets to that point, like, they're going to have to do something. Right. I mean, if he gets, but here's, even if the 25th Amendment kicks in, what happens? Who goes in that
Pence?
Spot? Exactly. So I
which is not necessarily a win. I'm with you.
It's not a win. Like, everyone's just like, and everyone's in such a rush for these, like, the two, like, how are we going to get him out of office? Well, we can impeach him or the 25th Amendment. Okay, so you get Pence in office. What do you think? You're going to be able to work with Pence any better? Like, Pence,
Pence is an old school, cookie cutter, conservative, Bible thumping Republican.
That seems to hate the gays.
Even though he is gay. I said it again.
Allegedly.
Allegedly.
Allegedly, maybe in his
said
mind,
by one
you
stand-up
know.
Comic in Cleveland, who sounds a lot like me and makes a pretty good case for it. One other thing about the book that I think was, again, everyone knew it, but now it's been said and published, is that he got into this thing not wanting to win. The book states that Melania cried when he won, not tears of joy, and that he did the whole thing basically to up his stature and make himself in better position to start his own television channel. And probably would have been an anti-government, anti-Hillary television channel. And then when he won, he was, like the rest of us, saying, oh, fuck, what now?
Yeah, and again, that is sort of...
We all kind of know it, right?
Not having read the book, I don't know where that's coming from, who's saying that, who said it, allegedly, supposedly. And I don't know. Again, this Michael Wolff guy has been known to do some pretty aggressive hatchet jobs.
Right.
He's even come out and said, I mean, his exact quote was, well, not everything in the book may be true, but, right, like, that in and of itself, you're just like, oh, okay, so in terms of credibility, I don't know. Like, the only thing I can take from this book are the quotes from a few key people that are conservative stumpers, that have been conservative stumpers for Trump, that are basically disparaging Trump. You know, like, that's
right.
What I take from this. Stephen Bannon, Laura Ingraham, Ann Coulter, a couple other people. That's what I take from it, and that's what has any sort of value, because it really goes to show that people who voted for Trump were duped.
Right.
The people who were supporting him the most on the highest levels didn't believe in him. Don't believe that he's a good leader. Don't believe that he's actually fit to be president. Right. But they knew that they could get this. They figured that they saw something in the electorate. They saw something in people. They honed in on the frustration and the anger of, you know, middle-aged white people, and said, all right, let's just press that button and press down on that vein and see what happens. And they won. And they got their guy in. And, you know, the agenda to this point kind of, sort of, it's kind of middle of the road, at a, you know, mixed report. But the people who voted for him, if they were being honest with themselves, they would say, damn it, they got us. I was duped.
Well, so another thing that these tweets always or often have had is a, now that the Russia investigation has been proven to be a hoax, fill in the next line. And that strikes me as the actions of a guy who's scared of what's coming next. He's really trying to beat the drum that the Russia investigation is a hoax. Everything I'm reading, and granted, I'm reading it from mostly mainstream media sources, is that Mueller is really starting to dig in. And I even heard that he, this came from the book too, I think, that he had tried to get his lawyer to tell Jeff Sessions not to recuse himself from the Russia investigation.
You need to state whose lawyer.
Trump's White House.
Right, because you were talking about Mueller. And
sorry,
no,
Trump. Yeah. Sorry, yes, Trump's lawyer said, or Trump told his lawyer, "Hey, stop Sessions from recusing himself." Jefferson Beauregard Sessions has been in the news quite a bit in the last couple of days for a bunch of reasons, and since he's such a show favorite, we need to talk about him. But the act of telling an attorney general not to recuse himself probably gets close to the textbook definition of obstruction of justice, right? I mean, you're saying I want to keep control of, and I know I'm not. Look, don't treat me like I'm a CNN correspondent. I'm not.
I'm just saying. Well, I think there's enough gray area there. I mean, there's enough gray. So I won't say it's textbook, but okay. it does raise red flags, big red flags. You know, go tell, like, he has his lawyer basically go, like Tony Soprano sending pussy over to you know, to bully somebody else. Like, go tell him he can't recuse himself. Like, and his lawyer should have immediately looked at him and said, "What the fuck are you talking about? No, like, sit down and shut up." Right? Like, if I'm his lawyer, like, child, please, like, let's just move on to the next thing. You're fired. No, I'm not, and we're moving on to the next thing. Like, I mean, and that's the role of a good attorney to a guy in that position.
I don't
think
Trump has attorneys who aren't anything but yes men. I mean, they have sued or threatened to sue so many people so many times. Bill Maher made a joke about his mom being an orangutan years ago, and he actually got sued. It was when, if Obama shows his college transcripts, I will donate $1 million to a charity. And Bill Maher said, if you can show a birth certificate that proves you're not the child of Fred Trump and an adult orangutan, then I will give $4 million to your charity of choice. He actually got legally sued for that, and it got thrown out right away. But that's how petty this guy is. So I don't think his lawyers ever question it. Do this, do this. Having said that, you can't do that to the... As much as I dislike Jefferson Sessions, and I think I've been pretty outspoken on that both here and on our website, he did the right thing there. He had no choice. He would have literally been in the middle of an investigation that involved potentially him. You have to recuse yourself, and I'm not a lawyer, but...
Right. Well, you're leaving out the fact that he would have been in the middle of an investigation that the agency that he is the head of is leading... And he is also a major part of, you know what I mean? Like, that's the reason why he has to recuse himself. And so, again, the whole idea of Trump sending the lawyer over to tell him not to, the lawyer needs to fire back. Like, listen, this is the right move. This is the right play. I'm not going over there. Like, for me to go over there hurts you in the long run. If someone finds out that I have gone over to tell him to not recuse himself, that's going to make you look terrible. That could be obstruction of justice. I'm not going to do it. A smart attorney.
Okay,
that's the conversation. That's the conversation that the attorney should have had with him. So now again, back to some of these people, while they may be very book smart, are fucking stupid.
You know, you said that on our show. I don't remember who it was about or how long ago. It was a couple months ago. But you literally have changed the way I think about things, because so many times I think to myself, maybe I used to just do that. Well, he's on TV, he must be smart. Well, he's a U.S. representative, he must be smart. You're right. Some of these people are really fucking stupid.
Right. I mean, how do you not wander into traffic and get hit by cars every day? I don't know. Because some of the stuff that these people do, it's so amateurish beyond, like explanation that I just have to say that the I got to question your street smarts,
right?
You know, your common sense, you know, in terms of how to navigate the world as an adult, right? I mean, it's insane how these people just like they step on their own dicks or you know smash their own tits for the ladies.
Thank you for being gender neutral. You know,
day in and day out, and it's just like I put my hands in my face in my hands on a daily basis. Just like, how do you let yourself do something so stupid? And any given day with anyone in Washington, you can say that. You know, like, how do you do something so dumb? Like, what were you thinking? Yeah, I mean, to the point where it's just like, now it's not even, now I actually don't do that anymore. It's just like, yeah, that's par for the course. Yeah,
and you, like I said, you've changed the way I think about things. I used to think there's no way they're that stupid. Well, maybe they actually are. So Sessions is in trouble there. Now, Sessions, he was my Deadpool candidate for a while. I kind of wish he still was, because he's now getting pressure from conservative congressmen saying you should step down, not because of... Actually, you should step down because you did recuse yourself because you are not maintaining.
Yeah, the charge is being led there by Jim Renacci, who's out of Ohio. He is a congressman out of Ohio, and you know he is really pushing for Jeff Sessions. Like he and another congressman,
I think there are like six or seven of them now.
Right, that had said, listen, you know Jeff Sessions isn't doing his job as the Attorney General, as you know the head of the DOJ and the head of the FBI, he is not doing his job in terms of controlling those agencies because they believe the DOJ and the FBI are overstepping their bounds with the Mueller investigation, and they want Sessions to step in and rein them in.
Right.
Right. And basically say, listen, back off. These are our guys. That's what they're not saying, but they're saying. They want Sessions to step in and come and say, listen, Mueller, you need to back off. You've been hired. You were hired by the, assistant director of the FBI, you know, to do an investigation. But essentially, you've gone too far. You need to scale back. You know, in DOJ, Department of Justice, you know, you need to, hold back. You know, some of these things, these documents that you're asking for and requesting, and blah blah blah. Like, you guys need to be a little bit more conservative here. And remember, we're all on the same team. Thumbs up, walk out. You know, wink, nod, gone. And Sessions is not doing that because, again, he's recused himself from this. And that's why he did it, because he didn't want to be in this situation. Because if he does that, then that could be viewed as obstruction of justice.
Right.
That is where, you know, criminal charges for him specifically can be levied over time after an investigation. So he did the smart thing. And them calling on him to resign, there's nothing wrong there, because ultimately then that would be his decision to leave.
Right.
You know, I mean, so they're just trying to kind of bully him into leaving. So it doesn't, you know, their hands are clean, but he has to make the decision to leave. You know, and I think it's interesting because who then do they put in that position? You know, who then, and but that helps them in a couple ways, because then they get somebody who wasn't in, because I'm sure they're eyeing someone, and I read an article on Politico that they're looking at whoever the head of the EPA, they're looking at him. I guess he has experience in his local, he was a state attorney general.
Okay.
And then he has some other experience. I think he may have been a state senator as well or something like that. And they're looking, I guess he's been kind of tagged as the person who would theoretically replace Jeff Sessions if he did, you know, step down. And I don't know what Jeff Sessions is going to do, because he's been attacked so many times that you have to wonder how much more can he take. But as I've said all along, Jeff Sessions has his own agenda that he wants to implemented, and he's working it right now. You know, he just released this memo that is rolling back the Obama era, basically memo.
The hands-off memo,
you know,
right?
You know, basically telling federal prosecutors not to go after marijuana cases in states where it's been legalized. And Jeff Sessions is saying, okay, federal prosecutors, screw that. You know, go after those, you know, go after those cases and prosecute in those states where it has been legalized. And that set off a whole kind of snowball effect where marijuana stocks go down and people are now just like, all right, so what does this mean? Is DEA going to come in and kick in our doors or what's going to happen? So that is part of the Jeff Sessions agenda because he's obsessed with marijuana and how bad it is. So, you know, and there's other things that he's done, right? Like he's, you know, everyone's really proud, you know, on their side, on the GOP and with Jeff Sessions. You know, another thing that he's done kind of a little bit more under the radar is push for student rights on college campuses. Whose student rights? Conservative students that are speaking out against, you know, liberal students. Now, I think that that's important because you want free speech for everybody. And, you know, we got a little text chain with Mike Wood where, you know, talking about like the liberal left has gone too far and fascism and everything else. And that's definitely alive and well on liberal campuses. I mean, you know, months ago we played the whole thing with the Harvard students. It was Harvard or Yale, and the students were screaming at the RA or whatever.
They're talking about the Halloween costume thing.
Yeah, the whole
Yale.
At Yale, and they're screaming at them like, "This is not hell. I need my safe space." And you know, they attacked that guy. You know, all because he wrote a letter that, you know, people should be able to wear whatever Halloween costume they want, right? Like, so this whole thing about freedom of speech is really important, but it's got a weird look because he's really pushing for, you know, he's pushing for people that are saying some, you know, some things that could be seen as you know, racist or sexist or whatever, to be able to have free speech. And then also some of the things that he did, you know, looking into the admission policies for different colleges, and you know, because there's not enough white students getting into schools, which is crazy because Harvard had like 85% of the students were white that were admitted into the school, and it's like, ugh, that is not enough.
We need to change that because we need to get that back
to 99.
Get that back to where.
But anyway, so Jeff Sessions under fire.
And then you and Mike Wood will use that against me and claim that I actually meant it later on, so I got to be careful.
You do need to be careful.
Words are dangerous, my friend.
Words are dangerous. And so back to Sessions and pot, you know, conservatives who are in, conservative congresspeople in Colorado are furious with Sessions because during his confirmation process, that was an issue that came up, and he said that was not on his agenda to reverse, and we, I think, both suspected that was bullshit, but now it's being proven to be bullshit, and I wonder how much that, I can almost see Trump removing him from office saying, I said during the campaign that I believe in states' rights and that marijuana falls into that category. I can see him doing his
excuse.
Let me
slow you up right there.
All right.
I don't see Trump saying, I said I believe in states' rights because I don't think he's savvy enough.
It's been getting played a lot.
What's that?
It's been getting played a lot on him saying that has been getting a lot of run on CNN lately, and I think he sees that stuff, and I think he would like to get rid of Sessions, and if he could do it with an excuse that makes it sound like he's sticking to his promises, I think that would be an easy out for him.
Fair. We won't get into the like actual semantics or, you know, language that he would use, because I don't think that he would say, I said I believe in states' rights.
Okay.
Like, he's just not that. You know, you're just talking about his mental capacity. Come on.
Right. No, fair enough. If he wants me to start believing in his mental capacity, get rid of Jeff Sessions, and I'll start being at least a bigger fan and not wanting you out so quickly.
You got to be careful. Again, you know.
Careful what you wish for?
Double, you know.
How much worse than Sessions?
Listen, at that position, I don't know. Could be.
Joe Arpaio, I guess, would be worse. And
well, I mean, at least, to be the attorney general, you need to be a lawyer. So,
I would hope so.
Start there.
I mean, let's look at who we nominated for. We talked about this not long ago. Yes. Moving on. So,
well, maybe we need to just go back, delete all our shows.
Yeah.
And then I'll just apply for attorney general. I feel like that is something that could actually happen. Like, based off of the people he's nominated for federal judgeships.
Lifelong appointment judgeships.
Lifelong, like people who have never been in a courtroom before. Yeah, this guy's totally ready to be a judge. So I don't know. Maybe it'd be worth a, run.
I got your back.
If I want to put my hat in the ring,
put your hat in the ring. I know it doesn't work that way, but I will go door to door for you.
Does work. Grassroots. Got to be on the ground.
All right. All right. So California legalized pot. I mean, it was a while ago, but now it actually goes into effect. As you brought up Mike earlier, and we do need to get him on the air with us. Like you said, we've been trading texts. But I asked him in a roundabout kind of dickish way if legalization had made things go crazy in California. And he basically said nothing has changed from yesterday to today. The media is having a field day with pot is now recreationally available in California. But the truth is, it had been recreationally available with a wink, wink, nudge, nudge for a long time.
Yeah, I guess it's not that I'm a big pot guy, but just being around it, I that's not a surprise to me. Like, right. I mean, same thing in Nevada. Right. I mean, like, it's been recreationally available for a while. And you know, when things kind of shifted, then, you know, there was a burst there, you know, but just day to day for people smoking weed. It's not like, you know, like the newscasters were just smoking pot live on TV. Like, I mean, shit, like it's going to happen subtly. It's going to get covered by the media very heavily, but the people who smoke weed are going to just keep smoking weed. They're just going to go to different places to get it.
Right, but the fact that they don't have to worry about legal repercussions is a big deal. In fact, one other huge thing about the California law is the California law also allows for people who were in jail or had served, suffered legal consequences for marijuana-related things they have to go through, I'm sure, a process, but to basically remove that from their records. And that's now, huge.
That's big. That's big, and that's not really covered by the media. But that's not really what you're talking about when you're saying, hey, so how are things now?
That's not what I was talking about.
You know what I mean?
About.
Like, that's a huge part of it, and that's...
Well,
that's,
I was being a dick when I brought up the mic. I asked him if that impacted his tweet or text to us.
And his response is perfect, like, because I almost sent the same thing. Like, I doubt anything has fucking changed. Like, you moron. Get hip with it. 2018, brah. Speaking of California and marijuana, back in December, middle of December, like, you know, holidays, we were both busy and family and all that other stuff.
Right.
And it's the holidays, Christmas, New Year's, how many people were actually listening? There was a story of a woman. Her name was Stephanie Smith, and she had a grow operation in San Bernardino, California. And she got raided by local and federal authorities. They recovered 18,000 pounds of marijuana in plant form, right? I mean, 18,000 pounds.
That's a lot of pot.
But 18,000 pounds, 35,000 plants, I think at like three different locations.
All right.
And the only thing, the biggest legal issue is that she didn't have a business license. And okay. Now, here's where this is an issue. Black community, beside themselves over this. Because it feels and looks like the screaming definition of white privilege, right? You got a white woman.
So you go more details on what happens to her. She had 18,000 pounds of pot and...
And... She was questioned briefly, like literally for like an hour, and then let go. Next couple days, she was seen shopping at a high-end shopping center with, you know, $1,000 glasses and.
Did the weed get seized or anything?
They seized the weed.
Okay.
Because she didn't have a license to grow it, and she got interviewed afterwards. Like they saw her shopping, they stuck a microphone in her face, and she was like, "It's not really that big of a deal. Like, you know, I'll be up and running again shortly after. I just got to get a business license." And it wasn't. And the reality is that there is nothing that should have happened to her. This is the proper course of action. She needs to go back and get a business license, but she'll start over again. she'll start growing, and she'll probably make a shit ton of money off of this because it's legal. January 1, you can buy it, use it recreationally and everything else, so she would be stupid not to get back into it. Who knows how much money she's made off of it from this point. So I'm sure she has the money to get back up and running with it. And the, you know, where people are upset is there was a kid around the same time, a black kid in another state, which is key, who had like an edible marijuana business. He got arrested, is being charged with a felony, but he was in another state. And I'm not sure where we were with marijuana in that state, but the issue, you know, the THC content was high and they had all these other things. But when you look at it, you said, okay, you have this woman in California who has thousands and thousands of pounds of weed. She's growing it and she literally gets a slap on the wrist in her weed taken. But you got a 15-year-old kid in X state who's, you know, just selling to different people, you know, other, you know, high schoolers and you know, whoever. And he gets arrested and hit with the felony. And so when you compare the two, it's like
apples to oranges.
It is apples to oranges, but on the surface it looks apples to apples.
I'm sorry,
and it looks like the kid is getting screwed over. And when you have the discrepancy in race, you say, well, gotta be because he's black. She's white, he's black, they're screwing him because he's black. But it's a different state. The laws are different. California, much more liberal. They raided her. Federal authorities. Now that's where I'm a little bit confused because the feds are there. So it's interesting that the feds are there, but they're going off of. It's not that confusing because if they're going off of and following the memo that Obama puts out, it says, listen, if it's legal in the state, you know, in any capacity, then you know you need to back off. So they, you know, the feds know. Well, based off of that, we're not going to be able to prosecute. So, just seize
it. I wonder if that's part of Jefferson Beauregard Sessions'
Well, you know, it could be. I mean, listen. I mean, you look at that. I mean, that's. I think the officer, the arresting officer, or the lead officer, we'll say, because I don't think an actual arrest was made. So that was the biggest bust he had made in his 26-year career, by far. You know, and that's 18,000 right. pounds.
That's a lot. I mean, that's weed. That's yeah.
You know, in three locations. So, you know, and I guess so. My point is it racial? Is it white? No, but I mean, that's California. That's where they are. Where this kid was, that's not where they are.
Yeah, and I'll be curious to see what happens with Sessions in the next couple weeks, and if he does, you know, I didn't think about the possibility that he was, you know, spurred into action because of that bust, but it would actually kind of make sense.
Could have been.
I mean, he could have had his, you know, federal officer saying, dude, our hands are tied. You know, we just seized 18,000 pounds. 18,000 pounds.
Think about that.
Fucking A. Sorry. It
fill this house up.
I would love to know what that looks like physically. Because I'm trying to when Nate Newton got busted with a van full of pot, it was a massive amount. It was like a van full, and it was like 400 pounds. And 400 pounds is a ton. I mean,
right?
It,
oh, yeah.
No, it's not. 400 pounds is not. It's a lot. It's a lot.
But I think he did get hit. I think it was like 200 some odd kilos, which would be 500 pounds. So, yeah, I mean, which is a lot, and that's a van full.
Yeah.
Well, this is. However many times that.
36 times that if it was
right.
500
and,
pounds.
And so, you know, so, I mean, that's...
Yeah, you're stacking...
36 vans.
that's okay. Speaking of football, the NFL playoffs start today. My Buffalo Bills are in the playoffs for the first time since 1999.
Welcome back to the club.
Thank you. Thank you. You sent me a text and it was funny. When I was out watching the games, I was sick as a dog all week, and I was... at home, following the Bills game and watching the Bengals and Ravens. The Bills needed to win and then have the Ravens lose to the Bengals. And at halftime, I was like, I can't take this anymore. I'm going out so I can have both games in front of me. So I went out. I was coughing and drinking beer anyway. And the Bengals were losing And I was saying things about Andy Dalton that were not particularly nice. I'd like to retract all of those things right now. Mr. Dalton, you're a fine human being.
You need to go donate $17 to
his little fund. I do. So that isn't that hilarious?
Yes.
So
it's a good call by
them. For what it's worth. So Andy Dalton throws a 4th-and-12, 49-yard touchdown pass. I went nuts. Videos of Bills fans going nuts were everywhere. Video of the Bills locker room when that happened was just awesome to watch. I mean, I was having a blast doing that. I got a text from you, so thank you very much. A bunch of Bills fans donated to Andy Dalton's charitable fund in $17 increments as a tribute to the fact that we've been out of the playoffs for 17 years. So anyway, the playoffs are going on as we sit here speaking, actually. What are your thoughts leading into the NFL playoffs?
Well, you know, there's a lot of interest in this first round, right? I mean, you have Kansas City, who's lost, I think, 5 consecutive playoff games at home. The last time they won a playoff game at home was like 1996, and Joe Montana was a quarterback.
I was listening to Bill's Sports Talk Radio Saturday. Kansas City, in their team's history, has two home playoff wins in their team's history.
Unbelievable. Ouch. Which is crazy because that's a tough place to play because the stadium is so loud and so raucous, and that's a big deal in football.
And they're an old franchise. I mean, they go back. Right. They
right, but it's just for whatever reason they have issues at home in the playoffs. So that'll be interesting because they're talking about Alex Smith not going back to Kansas City, and so if Kansas City wins a couple playoff games, you know, they win in the wild card round, and I'm not sure who they would face in the divisional round, but
it depends on what happens in Jacksonville. Yeah, Buffalo.
Well, I think
wins, Jacksonville plays Pittsburgh. If Buffalo wins, Buffalo plays the Patriots, and if Jacksonville wins, then whoever wins this game.
But the whole thing is, if Kansas City were to win a game or two or even three or four, however,
that's the Super Bowl. So
you know, I mean, like once you get to a couple games in. What do you do with Alex Smith? Do you really let that guy go? You know, do you really put the hands? Do you put the reins in the hands of a guy, Pat Mahomes, who you know this year is the rookie that they drafted? I don't know the answer to that question, but that's something to take a look at. You also have Jacksonville back in the playoffs. You know, for the first time in a long time, they're playing the Bills, your Bills, which, you know. This is unbelievable.
Our phones are blowing up we're trying to
like, and it's just people that, like, my fucking mom, like, why the fuck are you calling me? I just talked to you yesterday. I just saw her yesterday. Why is she calling me today at 5? There's no, I'm telling you, there's no good reason why she's calling. Like, it's something random. Like, hey, did you know that so-and-so, those are things you can text me. Whatever this is, I guarantee you it could have been a text. I guarantee. My mom's phone call right now, that should have been a text message. I'm just telling you that right now.
All right. Reel it back in.
If she doesn't call back immediately that I skip that call, then I'm telling you it could have been a text message.
Okay.
Like why? Anyway, sorry.
Random meltdowns from Steve at Whiskey Congress.
Here's the thing. How about this? Before you call me, think to yourself, can this be a text message? If the answer is yes, send me a text.
Okay.
If the answer is no, rethink whatever the fuck it is and figure out how to get it into a text message.
Bills Jaguars, go on.
Bills Jaguars. So that's big because the Bills early in the season trade Marcell Dareus, big run stuffing defensive lineman, to the Jaguars, right? And when that happens, Bills defense yards per
that
game.
That happened while we were on the air, as
it
you
did.
Recall. And you,
it did.
And you held that out and made me melt down.
I didn't hold it out.
You said, I want to see a reaction to this, and watched me melt down.
It just happened. So like it popped up, and it was like so unbelievable that I had to tell you. And then you melted down, which was like
what you wanted, and it was predictable. Don't play innocent foul.
It happened so quickly. I was like, I couldn't believe it. Like, wow, this is ridiculous. Look at this. I wasn't even thinking about your reaction until it happened.
Oh,
like,
okay.
I'd like to say I'm not calculating, but I'm not. I just the result was priceless. But anyway, so that transaction kind of looms over this whole game, but. The thing is that Blake Bortles hasn't been in a playoff game before. He's been playing well to this point, and Blake Bortles is a quarterback for the Jacksonville Jaguars, so he's been playing well to this point, but playoffs is a whole different thing in the NFL than the regular season. Does he cave to the pressure? Like, he's playing right now for his job, you know, because if he shits the bed, then the Jaguars may say they may go heavily after a guy like an Alex Smith or something along those lines, who's a little bit more steady,
reliable,
and more
game
consistent,
manager,
reliable,
yeah,
and everything else. And with that Jacksonville defense, Jacksonville and Alex Smith, that may be a hell of a combination.
True.
You know, or a quarterback who's more established and better and more consistent than what Blake Bortles is. And that may be on his mind, and that may impact his play. And if Jacksonville can't score more than 10 points, Buffalo may be Buffalo in there is a theory, there's a universe where the Bills beat the Jaguars and move on to the next round, which would be huge.
Oh, gosh.
Right? I mean, because the Jaguars are definitely a contender for the Super Bowl. So then the Steelers are sitting there. Then the Steelers lost to the Jaguars earlier in the year at home. So the Steelers are saying, listen, somebody can get the Jags out. We feel like we have a pretty good road here. You know, the Steelers have a bye this week because they were the number 2 seed. Patriots were the number 1 seed. So the Steelers and the Patriots are kind of sitting back looking like, what's going to happen? I don't think the Patriots are really concerned about anybody. I think their biggest concern was the Baltimore Ravens because of the matchup. Ravens have always matched up well with the Patriots, and they're one of the few teams that have beaten the Patriots in the playoffs other than the Broncos. But the Ravens were out when, I believe,
The Bills are in.
Bills won.
The Ravens are out. The Bills are in because the Ravens are out. And Steve, it was so funny. It came down to either the fourth or fifth tiebreaker. And the tiebreaker that put the Bills in the playoffs and kept.
It was basically D's nuts.
Well, it was the winning percentage of the teams you played. And the fact that the Ravens had to play the 0-16 Browns twice brought the winning percentage of their opponents way down. So
that's a killer. That is a killer, Browns.
You usually think of it as an advantage. You get to play the Browns twice in a year. But this year, that actually hurt the Ravens, which actually probably makes Browns fans happy.
It should, because it hurts the Ravens. And it's a little, you know, F you to Art Modell kind of, you know.
Posthumous, yes.
Yes.
And the Browns had their parade today, their 0-16 parade. So
before we get to the NFC side of the playoffs, that hurts a little bit. I don't like that at all. Like, I don't think it's funny. I don't think it's something to joke about. Like, that's bad for an organization. Like, the Browns are one of the original organizations in the NFL, NFL, AFL. They do have a very storied history with, you know, Paul Brown and Jim Brown and, you know, the championships they won back in the 50s. And I know that was a long time ago. Yeah, but that was an important part of, you know, NFL, AFL history that can't be forgotten. You know, they had some great players. And even in the 80s, when you had Bernie Kosar and, Clay Matthews Jr. and Eric Metcalf and, you know, all those guys, Kevin Mack and Touchdown Tommy Vardell, just there were great players. And it's an organization that has a history that is worth knowing and is important. Art Modell, who is demonized in this city, as he should be for moving this team, Art Modell did some great things for the NFL. He was very progressive. He hired, the tight end who is now the GM.
Ozzie Newsome.
He hired Ozzie Newsome as a general manager and made him one of the first black general, maybe the first black general manager in the NFL, if not the first, one of the first. And that was a huge thing, and I'm almost positive that it was the first. And the reason why that's important is because, you know, African Americans, black people, were not getting opportunities to do things like that in the NFL. And Art Modell said, Ozzie Newsome, you're a great player. You're a smart guy. I trust you. You're hired, and he's still the general manager for the Baltimore Ravens, and just some of the things that he did with the TV deals back in the late '60s and the '70s that really kind of put things in place for the NFL to do what they're doing now. Those things all matter, And that organization is important to this league. It should be important, right? When the Browns moved, this it was so their history and their legacy was so important that the that this city fought to say, listen, you need to keep our legacy here in Cleveland. Right. And when the team moves,
the name
they
stayed.
Go to Baltimore, but the name stays and the history stays and everything stays. And when we get a new team, which you owe us and promise us a new team, then we are able to keep the name. And everything that was great about the Browns before stays with them, right? And that's yep. that's important. So for that, a team with that history, to have a parade, you know, kind of
mocking a
an 0-16 season that's only been done, you know, two or three times, you know, two times before.
What? Only one.
Well, I think it's
Tampa was 0-14. The only other 0-16 team was Detroit. Okay. Detroit.
So. Winless regular season.
Okay.
It's only happened twice before, and you know, for it to happen to this team here, something about it just rubs me the wrong way as a football fan. And for people that are saying, well, it's just, you know, the fans are having fun and, you know, just the team hasn't given them anything to look forward to, like, that's part of being
a
fan.
That's true.
Well, yeah, you know what? And that's part of being a fan, and it sucks. So you put pressure on your organization. I don't think this is the way to do it. You know, I think you call in, you don't buy regular, you know, you don't buy the tickets and you don't buy the merchandise and you sell them, you know, get your shit together. That's how you do it. You know, you do it through using the dollar. This really is more just a publicity stunt for the person who's putting it on. I don't know who's doing it. I won't say their name.
I forget his name.
Doesn't Chris matter. We're not saying it. Because I think it's a bad look. I think it's a bad look for sports. I think it's a bad look for fans. I don't think if you can do this, if you can put this on and if you can go to this and you, then I don't think you're really a true fan of football. I know you're not a football historian and I just don't trust you as a football collective. So that's my opinion. And I just, again, I love the game. I love it on all levels. And when you do things that hurt it, I don't like you. I don't want anything to do with you. So fuck you. Get out of my city. And I'm not even a Browns fan.
Right.
I'm not even close to a Browns fan. I'm a diehard Steelers fan, but I think this is and fuck. It was 1 degree outside. 1 degree.
It was fucking cold.
I have one finger up, and that's the number of degrees it was outside. That's wrong.
Oddly, normally when you have one finger up in a room with me, it's not that finger. So
agreed. So look at that. Progress. Growing up. I'm an adult.
All right, man. What do you say we shut this down and let me get another beer?
All right.
You good with that?
Sounds good.
All right, man. Thanks. Yep. Good talking to you. Mm-hmm. We'll be back with more.
Yep.